DeMarco Show.
And I'm awesome!
With Greg DeMarco.
This is my temple!
And Patrick Godown.
You're welcome!
Let's go again, fight from the hands of the creator. Locust devouring all the hocus pocus.
Greg DeMarco, I love you.
Don't do it like that, baby.
And sometimes, at night, we spoon.
Take the fish.
And I love you, Greg.
You just made the list.
This is my yard now.
You know, it's funny, I always forget that this version of Sabotage goes longer than the older version of Sabotage. And I almost start speaking, and then I realize I cannot start speaking. However, that is just me, Greg DeMarco, your host of The Greg DeMarco Show, at ChairShotGreg on the Twitter. And, of course, if you're listening live, we broadcast this show live every single Tuesday night. You can find that on Blog Talk Radio, or you can find it on demand anytime, anywhere, over at thechairshot.com, where we encourage you to always use your head. And, of course, I am at ChairShotGreg on the Twitter. As I mentioned, I'm sure you can find me on Facebook. You can even email me. I have a brand-new email address, GregDeMarco at thechairshot.com. Patrick Goddard, we're so professional. We are now getting at thechairshot.com email addresses. That's how important it is.
Wow. I mean, I don't have one yet.
No, you don't. But I could get you one if you really wanted one. I could make that happen for you.
I don't know that I really. Do I need one? Who's gonna email? Who's gonna email the guy who got no introduction today? You just kind of sort of rolled in with me today.
You're still gonna get one. Don't worry.
Okay.
I have the pairing planned. I have everything. Don't you worry. You get the normal question because the voice you hear is, of course, the voice of the man without whom we would not be able to do this show, because I can't do it alone. That would suck. That would be boring. That is the voice of my very best friend, my partner in this for almost 7 years now, the wrestling realist himself, Patrick O'Dowd. He is the Jalen Rose to my Tua Tagovailoa, Patrick O'Dowd.
Golly. You are digging.
Mm-hmm. No, that's not digging. That's 100% accurate.
Okay.
You know why? Because cookies are for closers. That's why my kids really want to see that movie. And they started to say cookies because we have not seen Baby. And apparently it's quite good. And so we're going to have to
I think quite good might be I mean, I get why adults appreciate it. The Little O'Dowd has watched it. It's streaming on Netflix. So you can find it in like 30 seconds. Yeah. It's part of the watch instantly on Netflix. Like the Little O'Dowd watched it one time and I slept through about 30 minutes of it. I did catch the cookies are for closers moment. So,
I mean, it's in the preview. So,
Yeah, it's a funny little scene. The reason adults appreciate it is because there are a lot of sort of nod wink jokes to Alec Baldwin and his career.
And that's what you have to do for those movies. You got to put stuff in there for the parents. Otherwise, the parents kind of zone out. So all the good ones have adult jokes in them, which is really, really good. But vastly underrated kids movie for adults, Patrick O'Dowd, Hoodwinked, as you know.
Oh, I love me some Hoodwinked.
But Hoodwinked is a classic. Hoodwinked 2, I don't even think I saw, because it would have been a waste of time. But Hoodwinked, very, very
Hoodwinked's
good.
Hoodwinked's good stuff. Dinomite.
That, of course, is the birth of Keith.
It is. Watch out for Keith.
Watch out for Keith.
You know, and here's the thing is, since we've had certain interviews on this show, I no longer feel comfortable making the full watch out for Keith joke.
Yeah, it'd be hard.
Yeah,
it'd be tough to go out for Keith. I will tell you this, and this is, we're going way inside, way behind the curtain without fully pulling the curtain back. Said person knows about that. I'll just leave
good.
It at that.
Excellent.
Yeah, that person knows about it. I don't know if that person has told Keith about Keith, but that person knows.
Sure.
About it.
Watch out for Keith.
Watch out for
you're
Keith.
Just, you're just not scary.
That's right. Oh, it's been a while now. But when Keith made a triumphant return, that was a big topic on the show.
It very much so was.
It was good stuff. Good stuff.
We're gonna have people go through the archives, being like, "Where's this Keith joke?
Right.
Why can't we find
it?" It's not in any show description either. Not in any show description.
Yeah.
So.
So good luck with that, everybody.
Good luck. Yeah, exactly. Good luck. In fact, I don't know if I could find it if I wanted to. Like, I'd have to go back and find like show dates, not of our show, but of the something promotion, to find out when that person returned, and then you can match it up to one of our shows.
Archives of the archives for the archives.
Exactly. And then I have to figure out which network we were on at the time. And
no,
that would
be
a whole other challenge. So,
we have been journeymen.
We have been journeymen. However, we have our great home right now on Chairshot Radio. Of course, you can even follow Chairshot Radio, the Chairshot Radio Network on Twitter, at Chairshot Radio. And thechairshot.com. By the way, Patrick Redoubt is at Wrestling Realist. That's WRESTLNG Realist on the Twitter. He's even on Facebook, but don't bother. He doesn't ever check it.
Hey, you know what? I'll do it right now. Let's see what's going on on the Patrick Redoubt Facebook. I have 76 missed notifications.
That's quite a few notifications.
That's low for me. That's low.
It is. That's true. Last time you told me you were in the hundreds. But I made a reference, Patrick O'Dowd, to last night, because we record this live on Tuesdays, the national championship game for college football, where Alabama came back from, you know, came from behind, snatching victory from the jaws of defeat, or as most people describe Georgia, snatching defeat from the jaws of victory, to defeat Georgia and win yet another NCAA football national championship, at least according to most of those who make the college football poll selections and our college football playoff selections and everything else. There is still that contingency who is awarding that title to the University of Central Florida. Patrick O'Dowd, what did you think of the big comeback and, of course, the ballsy move of putting – we're talking football right now, people. I know. We'll get to wrestling. Don't worry. The ballsy move of Nick Saban to put in the rarely known freshman quarterback at halftime.
Well, it's like you said, it was a ballsy move, because you can't tell me that Georgia scouted that guy, like, at all. Why would you? When the quarterback you're facing had won, 23 out of 25 games or something, or he lost two games out of 20-some-plus starts in the last two seasons.
I think he's 26-2 as a starter.
Yeah. So you've got that. And it was clear that Georgia had done their homework with that. That being said, like the adjustments made by the defense on the Georgia side were not very good, and the offense lost any and all of its mojo. Like, it's so weird to watch, and this happens so often in sports in general, where a team gets up on kind of the more, you know, the favorite or the one that, you know, you're not expected to beat. And then you go away from what got you to the dance in the first place. And, you know, Alabama's defense really took off, but Georgia helped a little bit. And going away from, you know, working the edges, using their speed. They were using their speed so well in the first half, you know, working the outside, spreading out the corners and safeties, and really giving their guys opportunities in space. And then to kind of go away from that, like, I can't remember how many times I was like, why are you insisting on going into the teeth of the Alabama defense right through the middle? Stop it.
Yep.
Just stop it. And that's kind of what happens.
Yeah, and they definitely – I mean, they didn't adjust, and Alabama did, and that's the difference between a team who's been there and a team who hasn't been there.
There's
a
reason
he
wins all the time.
Yeah, we'll see Georgia back there. I honestly think.
Yep.
Their
recruiting class coming in is like the top recruiting class. I don't know how much they're losing, but a lot of people think that Georgia could be better next year than they are this year, or they were this year. So
they might even start the year number one. They could be the old preseason number one.
They are, quote, on the rise, or I guess either more on the rise. I don't know how much farther you can rise, really. You got like one place to go.
Yeah. No, they could definitely be. But it's funny because you think of the last major football games that we've watched, major championship games, you had, you know, last year's NCAA championship, you know, won on the last play of the game, then the Super Bowl goes into overtime, and then this game, last play of the game in overtime. Like, it's just crazy.
Such a great play by that quarterback, too, by the way, to look that safety off the way he did. That's a senior move out of a freshman. So.
Yeah. Well, and in all honesty, Jalen Rose might have to retire now. I'm not retire. I'm sorry. Transfer. Might have to transfer. Because I don't think he's starting anymore.
No, I don't think he is either. He was really classy about the way he did it, though. Or, like, you know, in his interviews and the way he handled it and managed it. Like, was very much like a cheerleader on the sideline. Was very graceful. Because he got asked straight up, how did you feel when you got benched? You know, in not so delicate terms. So,
got to be ready for that question, that's for sure. And he was.
Yes.
So, good for him. He had time to research how to answer it during the second half of the game, so he was fine.
Yes, he had all kinds of time.
That's not true. He still had a job to do, assuming the clipboard and everything. So he still has to play a role on the sideline. So, going into this game, Patrick O'Dowd, what was the biggest complaint that everybody had about this college football playoff championship game?
I mean, other than it was an all SEC final. Okay.
Yeah. So, and I know you didn't love that. I mean, you weren't railing against it like many people. But you didn't love that it was the all-SEC final.
You know, it's one of those things, you couldn't argue against the quality of the teams you couldn't argue against the quality of the Final Four teams. I think the only team that you really could argue against the quality was actually Oklahoma. And just that they were not a complete team. They were a deeply flawed team on the defensive side of the football. And that came to roost in the second half of their semifinal matchup against Georgia. But you know, I'm a Big Ten guy. I would love to see a Big Ten team that, you know, get there. You can't argue against losing by 31 to Iowa, for Ohio State. You know, Wisconsin unfortunately fell victim to, and I actually think Wisconsin had the stronger argument. It's very interesting. Wisconsin basically beat everybody they were supposed to beat, with the exception of Ohio State. Because of where that one loss took place versus where Alabama's took place, because Alabama's took place, you know, at the end of the season, Wisconsin got an extra game to blow it for Alabama to walk in, and that's kind of a tough pill to swallow. As a fan, I do think you could up it to 8 teams. You know, when that happens, I think it's a win. I don't think it's an if. I don't know when the argument is as to where it stops. I think 8's probably about as high as you can really go without it, you know, getting kind of insane. Like, you can't do like they do at the FCS level, because they play a shorter season. They play fewer games before going into the playoffs. So, you know, for people who like to argue that, you know, they play more playoff games over a period of time, they also play, I think they play, they used to anyway. I may be wrong, but it's a shorter season. So the regular season is done, and then you go into the playoffs, and it is what it is. So you're really not you're really not playing more games than the BCS would be necessarily.
Yeah, I think they play a 10-game season.
I think that's when you look
at the playoff, and with the playoff, not everybody plays that many. You know, not everybody goes to the playoff. And even now, if you got an 8-game playoff, or an 8-team playoff, you're looking at possibly, you know, if someone plays that extra kickoff game at the beginning of the season, you could have a 16-game season in college football. And then we're like, well, you can't play 16 games. Well, it's only going to be probably one or two teams that play 16 games. That's if they played the bonus game at the beginning of the season. If they played 12 games, you have the conference championship. So that is 13. So, yeah, 2 teams might play 16 games. That's it. Just 2.
That's it.
So,
and the odds of that happening are lower than low. The floor is... Yeah, like, it's just there.
Yeah, exactly. It's just so, you know, and we're getting these kids ready for the NFL, and I don't, you know, no one cares about the number of games college basketball teams play, and they don't play all the same number of games anyway, and all the travel they have to do, and you know, traveling to and from games all the time. I know just following the Pac, you know, Pac-12, I mean, they're traveling all over the place every other weekend, and they're gone from, you know, Wednesday to Sunday and Monday usually, so there's no, You know, I don't want to hear the travel argument either about student athletes because basketball and other sports do it all the time. And by the way, if you're listening, this show, if you saw the title, is called Show Paris. We are going to be all over the place today, and that's done by design because I just want to have some fun this week. Have some fun.
All right.
See Patrick Riddell and have a good time. But, so you hear that complaint, and I hear it all the time, and I hear it from quote-unquote experts. They are not thrilled that we have yet another national championship game featuring SEC teams or Alabama, and that's the bigger complaint too. They're just tired of it always being Alabama, and what's funny is that this playoff really became a reality when Alabama and LSU played for the national championship. That's when this playoff really started to become a thing. They're like, we got to avoid this, so we'll do a playoff, and of course, here we are, what, like 4 years into this, and we have two SEC teams playing in the championship.
Yep.
Is this the fifth year?
Yeah, I think this is the fifth year, if I'm not mistaken. And here's the thing that's funny about this whole deal, you know, people complaining about Alabama, beat them. Somebody beat them. I don't like that Alabama wins all the time, but you can't deny why and how they win all the time. And this national title game is actually a perfect example of why and how Nick Saban wins all the time. He outcoached his opponent. He made a move. Like, he made a move that changed the complexion of the game. And this is what Alabama does all the time. They have a formula that they'll run with and work. But the great thing about Saban, as love him or hate him, is that the man knows how to coach, and the guy knows how to adjust in a game. And he even knows how to adjust his style to the changing nature of football in general, because he was not a big read option coach when that took off. But he changed his game because he saw that system was what needed to do. And then he just found a way to use it to punish their opponents or his opponents. Like, they beat teams into submission. You're gassed halfway through the third quarter. If you're a defense playing against Alabama, because they just wear you out.
Yeah. Oh yeah. No, it's funny. They were going to the subject of having two SEC teams in the championship game. There was someone on the radio, and I don't remember who it was, and so I apologize that I can't attribute it to the person, but they said they were talking to a TV executive, and they actually said the ideal college football national championship would be an SEC team against a Midwest school, and either Ohio State or Michigan. That would be the ideal championship game. Maybe a Texas, but they're obviously – they've fallen off big time and have some work to do. But because the Midwest comes out in droves, the West Coast doesn't care, and the SEC is still the major landscape of college football.
Yep.
And even though Clemson is not in the SEC, you're talking about that same region of the country.
The South.
So the Southeast.
Yes.
Yeah, the South.
Yeah.
And then, you know, ideally the Midwest. Or, you know, the two highest-rated college football championships of the past 10 years both featured Oregon, believe it or not.
Yeah,
because
what else do you have to do in Oregon? right?
Exactly. They come out. And they just didn't go to sports bars. They must have actually watched it from home.
Yeah.
But
Oregon, Ohio State, right? That was one of them.
We're tired of Alabama. Who main evented the first nine WrestleMania? Eight of the first nine WrestleManias were main evented by the same guy. And that guy was Hulk Hogan. And we're at WrestleMania 9, he was not advertised to be in the main event, but we all know that Bret Hart invited him to go, and he ended up there. WrestleMania 4, he wasn't participating in the main event, but he was sure there, and he was the reason why Macho Man Randy Savage walked out the WWF champion. You know, in WrestleMania 1, of course, he was in a tag team match, because that was when WrestleMania was main evented by a tag team match. And then you fast forward, you know, several years later, we had several years of John Cena being the main event. And now we're getting ready to go on year number 4 of Roman Reigns in a WrestleMania main event, because that's happening. Like, I don't know. It's funny. You know, people try to find reasons why that's not going to happen. Short of an injury, Patrick O'Dowd, or a wellness violation or anything like that, can you imagine that not happening, Roman Reigns not being in the main event of WrestleMania 34?
No. No, he is. He's the guy. You know, and it's funny. There's a very, I think either yesterday there's an article that showed up on thechairshot.com talking about
Sunday night,
about Roman Reigns and how and kind of chronicled where he started to where he is now. And you know, I don't want to pump up the author's ego too much, but it's a pretty solid little piece. I know, I was trying to be subtle. Pretty solid little piece that talks about, admitting that or acknowledging some of the arguments that people still make about Roman Reigns today that are just holdovers, really, in my opinion, to when he started and the idea that he wasn't ready. The article argues, when he was first brought up and catapulted, he wasn't ready. But that also became part of his narrative. And became part of his development as a character and as Roman Reigns. And it is like you look at this guy's year, you're like, and it's funny. Did we even put him in our conversation for Wrestler of the Year?
We did. Yeah. He was
okay. Cause
Roman Reigns
was, like,
was in there. He AJ Styles. He was in there with
the Miz
and Cody.
Yeah. And it really, you look at what they're doing with this guy, like he's it, and he's got it.
Mm-hmm.
Like he's got it. He's good work. He's a good worker. He's not a work rate guy, which I think is the thing that people confuse work rate with worker, and there's a difference, and there's a big difference, because as I said last week, fuck off. Roman Reigns is talented. Like he's talented. You don't know what you're talking about if you say he sucks, and if you say everybody else carries him in a match, because it's just not so. He has a distinctive look, he has a distinctive style, he has something very much that he does and he's good at, and that gets over with fans. And that's all you need. Hulk Hogan had two moves.
Yeah.
And that's all he needed. He had Hulk up, punch, kick, leg drop. That was Hulk Hogan's arm. Maybe a body slam. Finger wave, yep.
A body.
The point.
Finger wave. Well, and not only that, but then even Bret Hart. Like the biggest criticism of Bret Hart was the five moves. Yeah.
Yep.
And Shawn Michaels, he was exciting. But remember, I saw a recent GIF online of Razor Ramon wrestling the 1-2-3 Kid. The 1-2-3 Kid takes a nasty spill, and I watch it over and over. And the most telling thing about this image that I want, I should have quote tweeted it and put this thought in there or whatever, place in like a college gym. And this was an episode of Raw. And I could see the back wall. And I can't remember the last time I was watching a WWE broadcast and I could see the back wall of anything.
Right.
There's always people. The only back wall you can see is this ginormous HD enhanced stage, which wasn't there at the time. It was some letters and a walkway they walked. It wasn't even letters, I don't think. And it was, and that was when Bret Hart and Shawn Michaels were on top.
Was that the Ico Pro years?
Yeah, there was a Raw banner in the background, but I bet if they zoomed out a little bit, I would have seen the Ico Pro sign.
Oh, yeah.
It was before, and that's why the Attitude Era came about, was to pull them out of that. And that's what needed to happen at that time.
Absolutely.
And that's when the small guys were on top. That's when the smaller guys were up there. Whereas you take them out of the equation, you got Hogan. You then go to, John Cena after, and even Triple H. And then I completely skipped the whole Attitude Era. But you've got Hogan.
Yeah.
Then, you got Bret and you got Shawn. And we're taking them out of the equation right now. Then you go to Stone Cold and The Rock and then Triple H and then John Cena and now into Roman Reigns. And none of them would be heralded as amazing workers. And even though that's the wrong term, that's what people would say. They're not great workers, when in fact, they're phenomenal workers. They have a low work rate, as you were saying.
Yes, very much so. And what's interesting is we're having this conversation, I can already see it. People are probably accusing us of being contrarian. People are probably accusing us of not knowing what we're talking about. I don't really know how to explain this in a way that can get through to those folks, but a Roman Reigns makes a lot of other people, he elevates a lot of other people that we love and would love to watch, because you need him.
You do need him. Because if you didn't have Roman Reigns, WrestleMania would take place in Bridgeport, Connecticut, or Hartford, Connecticut, which has happened because they were pulling out of an era where the work rate guys were on top. And that's why WrestleMania had in these smaller places. Now it's in ginormous football stadiums because of Hulk Hogan, John Cena, The Rock, Stone Cold Steve Austin, and now Roman Reigns.
Quote-unquote larger-than-life people.
Yeah, that's why you get to see the guys that you want to see, because if it wasn't for those guys, you wouldn't have a stage for Shinsuke Nakamura, AJ Styles, and, you know, Daniel Bryan back in his day, and, you know, my personal favorite, Cesaro. People seem to forget that. My favorite wrestler in the company is Cesaro. My second favorite wrestler in the company is Samoa Joe. But I'm not sitting out there asking for them to be in the WrestleMania main event because I know better. And if they were the WrestleMania main event, it's either going to be against Roman Reigns, Brock Lesnar, or Triple H probably. And that's exactly what we would get. And I would love it. I'd love every second. If you told me that I could have Cesaro in the main event of WrestleMania, but it had to be against Triple H, sign me up. Sign me up twice.
Oh, that'd be great, man.
Awful. It would be. It would be fantastic. And then Triple H would put the guy over a year later all over social media interviews because that's what Triple H does. Like, that would be, quote-unquote, best for business. And I shouldn't even say quote-unquote.
You know what would happen, though? Nobody would care about him putting him over in the interviews because they'd be pissed that he lost to Triple H at WrestleMania.
No, I think he would win. Triple H does not have a good WrestleMania record. And,
true.
And his last WrestleMania win thing. So.
Yeah, that wasn't that long ago, though.
No, it was just 31. But, you know, Sting did after that. It was fine. But it's all good there. But, you know, it's funny No, finish your thought.
Oh, no, I was just going to say, in hindsight, the right guy won in WrestleMania 31, by the way.
Oh, yes.
I was the guy who was happy with the result at the time.
Exactly. Oh, yeah, I was at the time. But like you said, hindsight is 2020. But these dynasties are good because it does make everyone else more money. You corner NFL owners, they would tell you that the Patriots dynasty was good for their bank account. And this Patriots dynasty, the way that's probably on its way out, that we may or may not, they didn't have planned for Show Paris, as we're doing here today. Mm-hmm. But this Alabama dynasty is good for college football in a lot of ways, and it'll be good for college football when somebody, you know, takes that over. And takes them on. And it's probably, you know, right now it looks like it's going to be Georgia. But you got to face Clemson's not going anywhere.
Well, that was going to be the thing. It's like people say every year, people say that there's going to be this team that's going to rise up and take them down. And, you know, first it was Ohio State was going to run with them because, you know, Urban Meyer and company was doing their thing. Then it was Clemson. You know, and Clemson has won one out of three matchups against them. Now it might be Georgia. We just don't know.
No, we don't.
You know what I mean? We just don't know. Clemson, Georgia, those are all very reasonable. Ohio State's always in the mix.
Yep. Oh, yeah. And then Ohio State could get back there very easily because they're considered a power, you know, and they're considered, you know, high power and their name.
And
football would have loved it if they were in the championship.
Oh, yeah. And that was the thing. The big whine that came out of the Big Ten, and I was one, you know, and I was one of these people who heard it a lot, but I didn't whine quite as much. Was this argument that the Big Ten, you know, they have an East and a West, and the Big Ten West is crap, which is largely true. But all these Big Ten pundits were complaining that because these teams, Ohio State, Michigan, Penn State, played in the East, at Michigan State, that it was going to be unfair as they cannibalized themselves. Beating each other up. You know, the funny thing is with all that talk to bring this full circle on Ohio State, they lost to Iowa, who's in the West, who is in the crappy division by over 30 points, like flat out embarrassed. And so Alabama lost, they didn't get embarrassed. And that's, you know, that's a big difference.
And one team that Alabama and Georgia lost to was who?
Auburn.
Remember? Auburn. Who beat Auburn in their bowl game? Central Florida.
Yes.
The uncrowned national champion. No, I'm just kidding. I'm not going to sit here and be the uncrowned national champion guy.
Yeah.
I'm not going to do that.
I think it actually takes away from their season to live on this magical chip on their shoulder for a national championship that is not recognized by the governing body of athletics in college athletics as a national championship.
Right.
Like, people don't understand that. Like, what?
there's precedent for it. Back before all this, national championships were disputed and claimed all the time. So
Michigan, there was one year, I think it was Michigan shared a title with Nebraska when Nebraska was still in the Big 12 or something like that. I remember that. It was like in the early 90s. I may be wrong about the other team, but it was definitely like Michigan won the Rose Bowl and was one of two national. Colorado was a split national champion one year. So,
They were. Surprising. Georgia Tech had one of those. I mean, there's been plenty of them that have taken place. And we don't have that anymore. Whether you want to say we have one this year or not, who knows? But I would have liked to see them get that opportunity. And that's what I want to ask you.
Sure, absolutely.
The idea of an 8-team playoff, and I do think 8 is the highest number we get to, for at least until the entire system gets an overhaul. And that's at least 20 years away before the entire system gets an overhaul. But 8. And there's a couple of things that I want to assume here before we talk about how you do this. The bowl system is not going anywhere. And I know a lot of people, when they say go to 8, like, get rid of all the other bowls, they're meaningless, they're stupid. Tell that to a player at Navy who got to play their bowl game in Annapolis and destroy the University of Virginia, which is fine, they suck. But, and I can say that, which also, by the way, lost in the bowl game to a really good Oklahoma State team. So I'll take that. But it's, so we're not getting rid of the bowl system. The major six bowls have to be involved. So how do we make this 8-team playoff happen?
So, and actually, here's what's funny is even if they went to a 16-team bowl or a 16-team playoff system, there's a book that I loaned you that you still have that I just forgot to take back the last time I visited because you never read it. It just took up space on your shelf that delineates this. And they don't get rid of bowls outside of the 16-team playoff. With an 18 playoff, I think you've got to look at, unfortunately, and people are going to hate this, you got to look at the Power 5 conferences. So your five Power 5 champions get in like that. You are conference champions. I'm okay with keeping the conference championship games for those larger conferences because I also think that the other reality that people haven't really talked about lately is we're progressively stepping our way to there being fewer conferences, but they being much bigger. Like we're talking like this idea of mega conferences, like the Big Ten, Jim Delaney is looking for ways to make the Big Ten bigger. That's why for some reason we have Rutgers because he wanted to get out to New York. So you have your five Power Five conference championships and then you get three at-larges. And that's where your Central Floridas who are undefeated and go through, their season, run roughshod over everybody, get their opportunity. What people will fear, and is a legitimate fear, is because of the precedent that was set out of this bowl game, is that, again, conference weight is going to take place. And so the only other argument that you can do that would honk off the Power 5 conferences is you get one, but you can't do that.
Right, guaranteed.
Like,
one.
You just can't do it. Because
I think
you could – But and here's the thing is what you would have had out of this, you get your five conference champions, you probably get Notre Dame, because Notre Dame had a tight season this year, if I do recall. You get UCF, and then that third spot would be the one that everybody would get to fight over and argue about for years.
Would have been Alabama.
Yeah. Like probably.
And this year would have been Alabama. So I like where you're starting. Any other constraints or major items you want to put in there? How do you address the bowl games with this?
The bowl games don't go away because the bowl games, you tie in the bowls that you've got that are already a part of the playoff system. So that's whatever that is, five or six now because they've expanded it to where it includes it's the Cotton, the Sugar, it's the Cotton, the Sugar, the Rose, Orange. Help me remember the other two. What are the other two?
Fiesta, and the Peach Bowls.
So there you've got six. And then you probably just sort of progressively go down through some of those other like tradition rich bowls that are played, those New Year's Day bowls that like the Holiday Bowl or whatever it's called now.
Citrus.
Maybe the Liberty Bowl. Liberty Bowl is always a a fairly solid one. And then the other bowls still exist outside of it all, like they always have been. And it'll still be lucrative for Power Five conferences and for other schools to go. For those people who don't know, a lot of the major Power Five conferences don't, like, when a team goes, the money for that bowl that's supposed to go to that school actually goes to the conference as a pool, and then the entire pool is divvied up amongst the conference. And so that's why a shitty SEC team can still get a solid amount of money when all these other teams go to bowls. And why Vanderbilt, or not Vanderbilt, like, who's terrible? Who didn't make a bowl in the SEC this year? Like, that's, but
I don't
crappy,
even know.
Crappy, yeah, some crappy SEC team. Mizzou made a bowl. Fuck. Damn,
did Ole Miss make a bowl? One of the Mississippi schools miss? I don't even know.
Yeah. So, but the point is, I'll use the Big Ten. Illinois still gets a cut of money from the Big Ten.
Right.
For all the bowls that everybody goes to. Now it's not as big a slice of the pie as Ohio State, but they still get some of that money. And what it does is it keeps those conferences superior to those lower conferences, at least in terms of facilities and resources. Because MAC schools go to like three bowls. The SEC, we couldn't think of a team in the SEC that didn't make a bowl.
Right, exactly. So, and it's fine. And they do. And that's why this one bowl tie-in that the group of five gets is so big is because that guaranteed spot that they get, as long as one team is ranked over a certain amount, that's money, and the money that they don't normally get. And that's why these crappy schools play SEC teams and everything else too, is because of money. There's a couple of things that I'm hearing about with everything that a lot of people want to put in the way of an 8-team playoff that I want to address. For me, there's, right now, as it was before and with the BCS and now with the college football playoff, like, to get in for one of the non-power conference teams to get in, you got to be, a certain rank, ranked high enough to get in, or you can be excluded. And I think that the same exists for the Power Five conferences in this playoff.
Yep.
So I think the top four should be guaranteed. And the fifth should be guaranteed if ranked a certain thing, maybe 12 or higher. The same with a Power Five conference or a non-Power Five conference to get in. So most years they would get in, honestly. It would be the year that, like, I can't remember. I want to say it was Big Ten or Pac-12 champ. There's a year where one of the champs was ranked like 22nd or 18 or something in the country. Would not have deserved to go in. And you got your Power Five, your non-Power Five school that gets in. So you get your field of eight. I'm kind of fine with that as long as you put those constraints in there. One thing that I can't fathom is I can't fathom two teams playing each other in the Peach Bowl for the honor of going to the Rose Bowl. Like, to me, that's so foreign to the process. Like, your bowl game should be – the meaning of the bowl game should not be to go to another bowl game. It may be to go to another game, but not another bowl game. So what I would do is I would rotate, take the six bowls, and I would rotate the quarterfinals between those six bowls. And on the off year, say I'm the Fiesta Bowl, because that's where I am. If I'm the Fiesta Bowl and I don't have one of the quarterfinal matchups, then I get one of the other two teams, because you're still getting 12 teams in these games. It's just that only eight of them are in the actual playoff. And those can be like your playoff kickoff game, whatever you want to call them. And so you're going to rotate.
The kickoff show.
right? And then your national championship is going to be, bid for – just like usual and everything else. The big challenge comes with the semifinal game, because you don't want to incorporate these bowl games. You could bid for the semifinal game and have a national semifinal. But I think that's where you could do something really, really cool. And I've thought this for a while, and I might even put pen to paper with it. So this is like a sneak peek, because everyone likes to say, play the first round games on campus. Play the first round games on campus, because you're asking people to travel three different games now, and that's hard and all of that.
Sure.
And I don't like playing first round. I don't think you should play the quarterfinals on campus. I think you play the semifinal game on campus, because how cool would it be? All right, and I'll even use Ohio State. How cool would it be if you're playing at Ohio State for the right to go to the national championship? If you're playing in Tuscaloosa, or go crazy with it. You get, you win the Rose Bowl, And now you're playing in the Rose Bowl because you're the host team who plays there to go to the national championship. Or all of a sudden you're national semifinals in Austin Stadium in Oregon. And in all these cool, amazing college football environments, like you get the chance to host your semifinal game, and it's based on the higher seed. Whoever gets the higher seed gets to host those games. Now you get to celebrate a big part of what college football is about, and you're doing the semifinals. You still have the bowl games. You're still doing those. You get your semifinal on campus, and then you play your national championship at the Mega Stadium in Atlanta at this amazing new stadium they built, in the Jerry Dome, out here, you know, play in the Rose Bowl. We're going to rotate it through and have people bid for it and everything. But then you handle you take away the travel aspect for two of the teams, which you give them a home field advantage, which kind of makes that regular – even though you get in, now how high you are is more meaningful. And I think it's a nice little dynamic that can kind of appease one of the major complaints, and it really does give somebody an advantage. And that's okay. That's why home field advantage is such a big deal in the NFL. Like, it kind of puts in the home field advantage aspect. And if someone complains about it, you know, do better during the regular season. It brings that regular season meaning back that people are complaining about, that when you expand to eight teams, it makes the regular season not as strong and not as meaningful. And I disagree. It actually makes it more meaningful for more people. So could swallow that, Patrick O'Dowd, if we played the semifinals on campus.
I mean, if you want to turn the college football playoff into the NIT, that's fine. That's kind of up to you. I don't know how I feel about that. I get it. Maybe it's not so much that we let them host it at their home stadium, but maybe it's a more regionalized stadium. Like, I might be able to get behind that. Kind of like what they do with the NCAA tournament. But I could let it marinate a little bit. You know, here's the thing: that wouldn't deter me from wanting that playoff system. How's that? Like, I wouldn't be like, this is so gross. Yeah, like, I'm not that opposed to it. You know, I do. You know, for the players and for some of that, it is kind of that experience of being pulled away to those, you know, being pulled to those places. That's kind of special as well. But you know, I do see your argument there for the semifinals. So, like, I don't think it's a bad argument at all. Sure.
Either that, or you know what? You know, a joke that I had before, but I wouldn't actually do. Throw them on a plane, play the semifinals in Hawaii. Take them all out there, both games. Everybody goes to the Pro Bowl. Play them in Hawaii and in front of a half-empty stadium. They would never do that. They'd have to make it free.
No.
That wouldn't happen. It's hard enough for them to have the bowl games in Hawaii when they do. So, there's a lot you could do there.
Did you see what a ticket was going for off, you know, if you were trying to get it off of one of, like, the trade sites for the championship game?
Well, there was – the tickets were crazy. People were trying to tout the $100,000 one of the tickets, but that was for actually for a suite. But, yeah, the tickets are crazy.
It was like $3,000.
Yeah, I mean, well, and of course, because it's, you know, such a short distance for both teams to get there. And regionally, it worked out perfectly in terms of travel for those players. So there you go. We've already solved all the problems of college football here on this wrestling program.
It's time for another edition of Baron Corbin Sucks.
I don't even see Baron Corbin. Like, even if he's on television, I just ignore him. I don't even see it. The women used to be the piss break match. Now it's Baron Corbin.
That'll do it for this week's edition of Baron Corbin Sucks.
So I am going to completely flip things around now on you,
okay,
Patrick O'Dowd, in show Paris today, because I heard something today that I was somewhat floored and just struck me as interesting. And it was the kind of thing that I would ask you about, and we'd have a conversation about off air. And I was like, oh, we'll do it as part of show Paris here today. Non-wrestling, but we'll have a way to work wrestling in. We always do. But there was a report today of a Christian college in Texas, Abilene Christian. I believe it's in Texas. With a name like Abilene, it's got to be in Texas, in my opinion. So I'm assuming it's in Texas. They recently put out a statement encouraging their students to not be employed by Hooters. And basically they said that Hooters does not represent what they want their students to represent, this and that, and they They recommend, I think was the word they used, that their students do not work at Hooters. And I found it extremely interesting. And you know, when you hear that, that an institution of higher learning would basically tell somebody, hey, don't take a job at this place. What do you think about that? And, you know, obviously, pull back the curtain. Patrick O'Dowd and I have both spent the better part over a decade now working in higher and post-secondary education. That's what we studied. That's what we do. It's our life. And so to hear this, what kind of things come to mind?
Actually, the first thing that came to mind is that it's interesting that Hooters got targeted as the den of where you shouldn't work because of what it represents. But for a private Christian college, not necessarily surprising. Is it something that I agree with, you know, personally? No. Professionally, no. I don't think it really should be an institution of higher learning's place to dictate where somebody, you know, maybe works to make the money so that they can attend your institution of higher learning. But it strikes me as something that's similar to schools that force you to, or, you know, require you to be, you know, sign off on an honor code. Brigham Young comes to mind right away, where it's not just, you know, and that's more about behavior, not necessarily about the jobs you take, but
right.
I think by extension,
I bet they would wrap working at Hooters into that policy.
I think they could fit it in quite easily. And so
it's probably not a Hooters.
Who knows? And so, to see that sort of report, it's just not surprising to me, you know, given where I've seen what other private institutions have required of students, especially ones that are faith-based private institutions. Like, and that's the other thing that's really important to pay attention to here. It's a faith-based institution. And so,
right.
You know, they're tying this, like, but can you still work at a strip club? Is that okay? Like, they don't recommend against that,
yeah,
right? So, like, I can take
my
clothes off.
I don't think that was a recommendation.
Wearing orange hot pants and a white T-shirt, that's too much. But stripping.
It's funny.
Yeah,
stripping is okay. You know, it struck me, and we've mentioned this before on the show, and you know, like, I would categorize myself as a God-fearing person. I go to church.
You are.
Unless there's soccer weekend. And you know, I've volunteered. I've done plenty of things. I've served in pastoral roles. And I was always the most unique because I'm loud and obnoxious and a regular, real person. And that appeals to a lot of people to talk to someone who's been through some of the same shit they have. And we'll use the word shit in the conversation if it's applicable. Like, it's good to be real sometimes and have those conversations, and that's why it works. I think this is asinine, to be honest with you, and here's why. Well, okay, I take it back. I don't think it's asinine. If you're going to Abilene Christian University, it's like 90% of the situations we face in our lives, you got to know what you signed up for, number one.
Yep.
This is where you're going. Like, what do you expect? It's you know, it's a faith-based, they're going to promote values, sometimes over education, and they're private, so they get to do more things. It's you got to know what you signed up for. It's perfectly within their right to make this request. It's perfectly within somebody's right who goes there to go work at fucking Hooters, though. Like, I have no problem whatsoever with somebody going to work at Hooters. And a big part of what was in there is because of the way they portray the female body. And that goes into, you know, that now you're getting into females' choices with their body and things like abortion and stuff like that. And I don't care how many years I've been going to church, I don't have the right to tell somebody what to do with their own body. Like, I think it's stupid. We're not getting into abortion talk here or anything, but it's choice. And you know, without opening the Bible too far, there's a thing called free will, and it's there for a reason. And if somebody wants to go work at Hooters, go work at Hooters. The other thing is locally, okay, I'll give two examples of not even strip clubs, restaurants, okay? Tilted Kilt. They wear far less clothing at Tilted Kilt than they were at Hooters, right? Scarlett Bordeaux used to work. She was in, you know, took her forever to finally get into the Tilted Kilt calendar, and when she did, it was a big deal. We talked to her about it, all that stuff. Like, that was a big thing. They wear far less clothing there than they wear at Hooters. All right? We have a place here called Twin Peaks. You can imagine what this is like. All right? It's like It's like the Tilted Kilt with shorter skirts and smaller tops is basically what Twin Peaks is. And there's one right by a movie theater. My wife and I go to. We went there once, and we're like, oh, they're wearing very little clothes. And no one puts that in the same vein as Hooters, because Hooters has, you know, been around way longer than either of these places and has this mm-hmm. reputation. But if you were to line up a Tilted Kilt girl, a Twin Peaks girl, and a Hooters girl, the most modestly dressed person is the Hooters girl.
Yeah.
And if Abilene Christian University was holding a spring break event somewhere and you were allowed to wear a swimsuit, they would probably require a woman to wear a one-piece swimsuit. And
yep.
if you look at what a Hooters girl is wearing, it is equivalent to a one-piece swimsuit. and so if they're getting into the objectification of women, you know, whatever, but it just seems really weird if you take a step back and think about it. Like, it just strikes me as odd. It really strikes me as odd. But that also comes from a guy who doesn't, you know, and this came up in a private DM chat a couple weeks ago. A lot of times women with the clothes on is more attractive and alluring than women with the clothes off. And because
yeah.
there's some mystery there too. And you know, when you take away the mystery, there's really, you know, mystery is a big part of seduction. And when you take that away, and of course we're selling seduction and we're talking about a Christian university, so we've gone way off the rails. But
yeah,
just,
I was like,
where, you know,
Greg went all political.
Yeah, well, for a minute, but you know how I feel about politics. So
I know you.
It just strikes me as odd. And if there are stories that come out, and this came about because a female or male, whatever, who works there chose to go work in one of these establishments, good on them. You do you. You may suffer some consequences. Suffer them. Like, it's worth it for you to take a stand and do the shit that you want to do with your life, because it is your life. Whether if you give it up to a god or somebody else, it's if you actually know what things say, it's still yours. And you make your decisions and you deal with your consequences. And that's the way that things work. And I just, you know, I would never tell somebody where they can or can't work. Now, if you swing your own kids into it, yeah, it becomes a different issue because you want the best for your kids and you think you know what's best for them. But, you know, I look at my job as a parent to prepare my kids to make those decisions and to prepare my kids to do exactly what I said about Abilene Christian, to know what they're signing up for when they sign up for something. And that's all I think we can do. At the end of the day, they eventually get old enough to move out and do whatever the hell they want.
I don't know how to follow up with that, man. You have spoken me into silence for a second.
I thought maybe you were drinking.
No. It's true. Like, your points is pretty valid. Like, and as I sit there and I think about my own son, like, he's only five. And where he's going to go. You know, I'm the opposite of you. I'm not a religious guy, like, at all. Like, I did that for a while and then was like, thanks, I'm good.
Let's pause right there real quick, though. I want people to understand,
because
we may not have this conversation on the air again, because it's just, you know, how often we're going to show Paree, although we literally have callers in queue that we never have right now. It's crazy. Lifelong Christian, not even lifelong Christian, I would be considered born again. And someone who had it around him, and just, you know, we're opposite ends of the spectrum in that, and it's fine. It doesn't matter at all. Like, it's never mattered for us. Never, ever, ever.
Yeah, I'm a recovering Catholic. Oh.
Exactly. What's funny, so am I. I was born and raised Catholic, and I hate it. I think it's stupid. I think there's a lot of things I do that are dumb. But I can't tell someone else not to be Catholic, but what I want for my family. And my wife and I are on the same page. And that's the biggest thing. Like, that's what I'll say about in terms of religion and choosing and your friends or whatever, they can do whatever they want. But if you and your spouse, you and your significant other aren't on the same page, or at least close to it, it can be a big-time challenge. It can be a strain in a relationship because it's a big part of somebody's life. And not believing is a big part of somebody's life. If I sat here and had a historical conversation with an atheist about the Bible, they'd probably know more about it than I do. And that's because they're arming themselves with it for a very different reason. Mm-hmm. And that's fine.
Yep.
But it's, you know, to me, it's just funny. Like, people know that we've been doing this show, you know, going on 7 years. It'll be 7 years in May. And they probably don't know that we're that vastly different on something But that's fine. Like, I would never ask Patrick Dow to change. He would never ask me to change. And that's the way the world should be. And I kind of think it's what I'm getting at here with this whole Abilene Christian thing. You know, if someone wants to go do that, great. They're not doing it wearing an Abilene Christian shirt. They're not walking in there and saying, hey, y'all, look where I go to school. Go in there and make a fucking living and to make some money so they can go to school. And if that's what they choose to do, that's what they choose to do. Like Patrick Dowd said, there's worse things they could do. They could go out there and be a stripper. Just really struck me as interesting today when I heard that.
Yeah.
That's all I'll say.
That's an interesting way. I guess that's a good way of putting it, is that it's just, again, it's not something that I would ever put past a school, but if it's out there, I do like that it says recommends, you know, because that gives you the wiggle. It's like, here's the risk. Here's the risk you're going to take.
Exactly. Yeah, it's recommend. They can't go full. I'm sure there's a reason why they use that verbiage. You know, working in the environment, things have to go through levels of legal and everything else before they're released. So it might be a little bit different private environment. Who knows? But where I work is currently for profit, and we'll soon be changing away from that model. But it's also very different. It's not a brick and mortar school, so it's completely different. Different environment there that I have to work within, and different constraints that we have to battle each and every day. So very, very interesting. But if you swing that around back to the world of professional wrestling, which we've been doing, and you look at what the WWE is currently doing with the women and the women's evolution and now the Mixed Match Challenge, and you look at what recently happened over in India with a match between Alexa Bliss and Sasha Banks, and they had to wrestle this match fully clothed, like very little skin showing whatsoever. And it's funny because Alexa kind of had to throw her outfit together, where Sasha had like this full-blown bodysuit.
Yep.
I can't remember what Marvel or DC character was modeled after. It was modeled after somebody, though. And I feel bad.
Hold on. I'll Google image it, and I'll be able to tell you when I look at it, I'm sure.
Yeah, you'll be able to tell you when you see it. But what's funny is that I came out of this match, and I was extremely happy that they got to do this, and they're crying and everything else. And the first thing that came to mind, I was like, Sasha might want to keep wearing that outfit. Like, it worked for her. And we've gotten to this point where wrestling, women's wrestling is not all, you know, TNA, so to speak. And I'm not dropping the name of the company. It's, you know, we all know what TNA stands for, and we know why WWE named the tag team that. And the women now, you know, haven't really had to fight those stereotypes the way that a Trish Stratus or a Lita had to fight before them, because Trish and Lita were the ones that kind of pulled the company out of what, you know, the women and the divas were, into what they've become. And they were really that bridge between those two things. And it's nowadays, those women can do a lot of, they have a lot of leeway, a lot of freedom with how they image themselves and what they do. And half of them don't even have fake boobs anymore. And that used to be unheard of. It just, you know, the women have evolved, and they've literally evolved since we've been doing this program. 7 years ago, 6.5 years ago, that women's division was extremely different. Patrick, I don't know if you found it or if you're able to speak, but it changes on the air.
Yeah. Sorry, I was still looking through to try to find the. I found the image of it. I don't recognize it. There's a nice. I mean, there's a couple of pictures of the two of them side by side.
I saw it reported.
Alexa just looks like an extension of her own outfit. But yeah, I don't see.
They wrestled in that match. They were a hero to every female in that building.
Oh yeah, absolutely.
The fact that they got to do that, like they were living somebody else's dream in that sense. And usually they're out there living their own dream. Like they literally provided hope for a nation of women going out there and wrestling what was probably not that all that long of a match and everything else that was going on. So it's very, very, very interesting to see what happened there. But I want to swing things around a little bit in the Mixed Match Challenge and come back to professional wrestling. A team was announced, Patrick O'Dowd, that I find extremely interesting. And I'm half excited and half – the one team that I'm most curious about is Asuka teaming with The Miz. Like, that team just strikes me as a little bit odd.
It strikes me as a team that should a little bit win, but that's just a little bit win.
But it's funny, you know, The Miz just returned on Monday Night Raw. He said he's going to get his Intercontinental Championship back, all this stuff. And who knows? But what if they lose? Like, what if they lose?
I mean,
and this takes the fall, and so it shouldn't count as a loss for Asuka. But
no.
If they lose and the Miz takes the fall, what's the Miz? How's the Miz likely to respond? Where's the Miz likely to place blame?
Well, he's probably gonna blame Asuka, because that's what I would do if I were the Miz.
Yeah, I would. That makes sense. As the Miz's character.
Who he is as a character. I don't know where that goes necessarily. It sounds like you may have an idea where
that
goes. Sounds like a theory. What's that?
Are they ready to do something as crazy as the Miz versus Asuka at, say, WrestleMania?
I don't know if they're ready. Well, maybe.
Because here's the thing.
I think that would be huge. I think that would be a huge idea. Yeah, I think. I mean, if there's one thing the Miz has proven, is that he is a company guy.
Yes.
In a terrific way. You know, I hadn't considered that, Greg. I really hadn't. And you know, there has been a real rise of at least on the indies. You know, there's been more intergender matches that have been taking place, happening more and more. Actually, a lot of former guests on this show are quite vocal on Twitter about pulling for more of those kinds of matches. So, you know, is this? If they did something like that, it would make a lot of sense. It was something that they could market the hell out of. It's something that could only, like, I really would. I think the only thing that would concern me is kind of what they do with the result, how they do that. Because Asuka's got to win, and she needs to win looking good. But
she's got the opposite. With the strikes, I mean, it's very easy for her to get Miz down to his knees, kick him in the head. Like, there's so much.
Yeah.
It's just, you can do it with Asuka. Like, her style of offense makes sense. You could. It wouldn't hurt the Miz. It wouldn't hurt the Miz one bit.
Well, there's no such thing as a loss that can hurt the Miz anymore, in my opinion. Like,
exactly.
It doesn't matter what happens. And
not at all.
And.
Yeah,
so I think he makes a lot of sense in that framework.
It just, when I saw that pairing, I was like, wait, there's got to be more to this. Like, all the other pairings are either, you know, ironic, or they somehow make sense, or they can work.
Yeah.
And it just, but when you take the two people that are such far ends of the spectrum, and there's a picture where the Miz is hugging Asuka, like he's happy about this, and the Miz should be happy about this, because in his back of the mind, he's like, we're going to win. Everything from the Miz's mouth should be, this is over. It's over before it even gets started. We've won because it's the Miz and it's Asuka. And so when they lose, even if the Miz is the one who eats the fall, it makes perfect sense for him to blame Asuka and set the ball in motion for this match at WrestleMania. Because here's the thing. Where else? I don't have a spot to pencil Miz in right now for WrestleMania. And because we're not going to do the Mr. Rogers Balor Club, that doesn't make sense right now. And we'll probably have a Balor Club conversation for next week because they're not going anywhere, as we learned this week on Raw.
That's true.
So they're this is a thing, probably planned longer than we would like to admit. Not you and I, but the collective we of the internet wrestling
royal we.
Community. The royal we, yes. The dilly dilly. I can't believe I just said that. I hate that more than most people do. But. And it's irrational hate. It's stupid. I shouldn't. But anyway,
I
could really see Miz versus Asuka taking place. We would have more people in queue, Patrick. People really want to talk to us right now. It's kind of funny.
And we so rarely take off.
I know, and we don't really have time to.
Because
we're only able to go over to
Yep.
I know. We're slightly over, and that's okay. I'm at the spot where we're able to be over for a few minutes anyway. Yeah, with Chopri. Who knew that Chopri would go the way it did? We didn't. That's why it's Chopri. And they've shown Chopri now moving forward. Who knows? But it's just one of those gut instincts. I've had a lot of gut instincts recently to the point where I feel like a wrestling website. Like I'll just keep, you know, you put enough stuff out there, something's going to be right and something's going to be wrong. I can literally go home tonight, Patrick, and type up, the WWE is doing this to run with the Miz versus Asuka WrestleMania. But plans may change.
Speculation.
Speculation is that, and you know, continue to move forward with that. But it just strikes me as odd, Patrick O'Dowd, and strikes me as something that the company might be able to do moving forward in you know, with those two, and we'll see what that means, Patrick O'Dowd, and see if it's a thing that can potentially take place. So if it happens, you know I'm going to be talking about it for a long, long time. That's for sure.
Yep, it'll be so awesome to hear you brag about how you called it. Awesome. Yay.
Would you
though? Yay.
Would you be amazing?
Yay.
It really
All right, gentlemen, you have 3 minutes, and you better make it good.
We got 3 minutes, and we're out of here. The clock is ticking, and we're in the clear. We got 3 minutes, and we're out of here. We got 3 minutes, and we're out.
So Patrick O'Dowd, it's you know, we're sitting here at the 3 minute warning, and we did a show pre-show where we didn't have a specific topic, we didn't have anything in mind to do to talk about, and really just kind of took things as we wanted to, have some fun with them, and take them forward from there. So to me, it's only appropriate that we end the show in one way, and I'm gonna go first to give you a minute to think, to give you a minute to do what you want to do, and it's to bust up. To dust off something for the end of show.
Bang, 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 bang. Try and stop it. Bang, bang. Here I come. Bang.
Quick hits.
Bang.
My quick hit this week is extremely self-serving. 100% self-serving to me and a bunch of other people who are working really, really hard to bring you something that is better than what's the average out there. And that is, of course, chairshot.com. Where we recommend that you always use your head. And the reason why I'm talking about this now is because there's a lot of damn work going into this website. People are working their asses off to really put on a solid site. You've got someone like Andrew who is out there live tweeting Raw, live tweeting SmackDown, trying to get things going on Twitter, trying to come up with a new rating system to rate matches and give people a different way to evaluate those things. PC Tunney is working his butt off to add shows to this radio network. We had two shows to the radio network this past weekend who were going to be sending us things. We helped shows come back that weren't shows, you know, in the past. It motivated Patrick and I to come back and actually do this thing more regular. And it's this, we're all in on it. Like, we're getting ready to revamp an old T-shirt store and start releasing chair shot stuff that way. And if you're not regularly going to thechairshot.com, there's a couple of things that I want you to understand about it. And there's not this about page yet, but it's in the works, and you can put it up on the website soon. Number one, we are not going to bullshit with you. It's called Always Use Your Head for a reason. We're venturing off into wrestling news. We've got Joe out there doing wrestling news right now, but it's wrestling news with opinion. We will report the news or report the speculation, and then we'll be honest with you and tell you what we think about it. We'll tell you if we think it's bullshit. We'll tell you if we think it might have a chance. We're not going to hide from it. We're going to put it out there, and then it's done well so far. We're here to do the same thing that Patrick are here to do, and that's to help you enjoy wrestling more. But we're also out there to encourage you not to be stupid. That's why we say always use your head. That's why I wrote the Roman Reigns piece that Patrick was talking about. I admitted he wasn't ready. That actually surprised a lot of people, Patrick O'Dowd. When I said Roman wasn't ready, someone messaged me. They were like, wait, you thought Roman wasn't ready? Like, I admitted that Roman wasn't ready, but like you said, it became part of his story. And I thought that was brilliant that they did that. We, in working behind the scenes and putting this thing together, we fully expect, as the way things are trending early, as we're in month number two, really, the full-blown rollout, this site to be, you know, a powerhouse by the end of 2018 and to be doing big things and to have a voice. And it's already, you know, I've already had people reply to things on Twitter that they read an article that wasn't because it was seen on Facebook, or wasn't because this, it was because like a friend sent it to them, or they were going to the site. The number of new visitors to our site has gone down in terms of percentage, meaning that people are coming back, and that percentage has gone down greatly just over the past couple of weeks because people are routinely coming back to see and read what we have out there. So we're not blowing smoke up your ass. Like, this is real. It's been a lot quicker of a development than I thought it was going to be, and I owe a lot of that to people like PC, like Dan, who is the architect of the ChairShot Radio Network and the ChairShot.com, like Andrew, like Joe now, who's in there, and like, you know, Steve Cook, who's doing a ton. You got Stephen Mitchell, who does all the show coverage tirelessly and gives it all to make that happen. And it's all out there. It's all out there for you. At the end of the day, you know, we've had people who said, hey, there's this ad that on my mobile device is screwing things up. We turn that ad off. Like, I found out which ad it was. I talked to somebody. I got some feedback about it. Day later, that ad didn't exist anymore. It didn't hurt us from a revenue standpoint because that ad wasn't doing anything anyway. We took the feedback. We took that ad away. And that's what, you know, I told you, my Greg DeMarco at thechairshot.com. Like, it's going to be published on the website. You don't like something? Email me. You want to see something? Email me. I can't make you any promises because we're going to do what's best for the site, but we want to have the best user interaction possible. So go there to thechairshot.com, and remember to always use your
bang, 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 bang. Try and stop it. Bang, bang. Here I come. Bang.
Quick hits.
Bang.
Hopefully I stalled enough for you to come up with a quick hit, Patrick.
It's an easy quick hit, so I'm just going to let you segue me in here with your always use your head. And this is going to be your weekly reminder, everybody, that every article you read rumoring the return of the Undertaker is not true. Stop it. I don't believe it. I won't believe it. And if the Undertaker hates his, if the Undertaker quote unquote disrespects the business as hard as it would be, as hard as that could be, for him to come back, like, he just won't do it. I don't see him doing it. He's not wrestling John Cena. Let's move on from this, people. Stop.
I
stop,
agree with you.
Stop.
100%.
Stop.
100%. You know, it's funny. We actually have an article up there about that. And in promoting it,
yep,
I even said, I don't see it. I flat out put my own personal spin on it. I don't see it. And that's what we'll do. Like, it's speculation's out there. Other sites are going to talk about it. We got to talk about it. But we'll tell you. We don't think it's going to happen. I don't think it's going to happen.
I'll sit here on the show and eat crow if, you know, if after the 25th anniversary episode of Raw, we're sitting here, you know, looking at an Undertaker WrestleMania match, I would be, I'll put this out here too, he will lose me as a fan, actually, a little bit, because part of what I respect about him is the way he went out. It'll lose a little bit for me.
The Tuesday night that we record this show after the 25th anniversary edition of Raw,
yep,
we're talking about it, because if it happens,
absolutely,
it's a story, and if it doesn't happen, it's a story. So regardless of what happens, the speculation has drummed it up to a point where everything that could possibly happen on that show is a story. And that's not a bad thing, to be honest with you. It makes our jobs a lot easier. So thank you to all of those out there. Now, before we go, Show Puri, what how'd you feel? What'd you think?
I was surprised we talked as long as we did about college football. I'm not going to lie. Like, that was, you know, I like Show Puri. I think it could be a fun little break in the monotony, you know, every once in a while. And I got to tell you, though, I'm ready to start talking some Rumble. Like, start watching them all again. I'm ready to start talking some Royal Rumble, man. Like, time's coming.
You know what, Patrick Goodell? Next week, let's hop in the Wayback Machine.
Okay.
And you pick a Royal Rumble, and we'll watch it, and we'll talk. And we'll make it, not right now, not right this second, but
all right, I'll
think
send
about
it
on it. Yeah, send it to me. We'll make it happen. Resend me the category so I can remember what we do, because it's been a while. And
you know,
we'll talk more
time.
Rumble next.
Okay. All right.
It has. All right, next week we will do that. Everybody else listening out there, we thank you for listening. Go to thechairshot.com, and remember to always use your – and before you do that, tomorrow night, right here at thechairshot.com, Chairshot Radio Network, Sirius Brad, Pin the Shoulders podcast comes back Wednesday night. Got a huge interview coming up with Matt Riddle. Don't miss it. Go to thechairshot.com and always use your head.
Makes a man? Is it the power in his hands? Is it his quest for glory? Give it all you got to fight to the top, so we can know your story. More.
We're beautiful and we wrestle.